This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The music of Marion Hayden is just one chapter in a luxuriously long story of jazz in Detroit. A composer, bass player, 2016 Kresge Artist Fellow, we knew she was the perfect person to cap our Black History Month conversations about art, artists, and the African-American experience. Marion Hayden's experience as a musician, composer, and educator at the University of Michigan links the generations. We asked her about a formative performance as she was growing up in Detroit that set her on the path.
I grew up in Detroit, and Detroit had such a great legacy of live music and great music in the schools, great public school music education. And one of the things that used to happen a lot when we were kids was they would take us down to see the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. And I just remember at that time they played in a building that's no longer here. It was called Ford Auditorium downtown. And I remember very well going into that space and hearing the instruments and just how impactful it was to feel the vibrations of the music at the time. And that was something that was really, really, really meaningful to me.
Could you say more about what that acoustic experience was like?
I think a lot of it was, as I said, you know, I really feel music in a real visceral way. So for me, it was the way that it just kind of envelops you when you're there. It's one thing to listen to music through some, you know, through earphones and the kind of ways that we listen to recorded music, but it's another thing to be in a space where it really is, it's literally all over you. The sound is pouring over you physically. And so that was something that was really, really impactful for me. And then it just continued on when I was really young, probably about maybe seven or eight, our church would have a function also at Ford Auditorium, oddly enough. And I remember one time they had a harpist by the name of Dorothy Ashby at this event. Now, Dorothy Ashby, of course, I didn't know at that time that I was seeing someone who was of great significance, but she was probably one of the first to really put harp on the map in jazz. And she was from Detroit also. And I remember seeing Dorothy live. I mean, she was just playing kind of a casual gig at our church, probably just a Sunday afternoon gig, because she was a legit musician. And to me, what legit musician means is she's someone who played music for her living and for her soul. So if you need to play music all the time, then you will play music in all different places and not just where people are in uplifted spaces where you think that people are putting you on the pedestal of the stage. Your life is a stage. If you really play music for the right music, right, for the right reasons, your entire life is the stage. She was fantastic. I will never forget in my life what she played. She played Moon River. And it must have been not too long after, because that was from Breakfast at Tiffany's. And so it must not have been too long after that came out. And it was just, I will never forget it in my life. So, yeah, so I think, you know, for some of us, music, you know, will affect you that way.
What kind of rendition did she play?
She didn't. She just, if I remember correctly, she pretty much stated the melody, and she probably did some improvisations on the melody because she was playing solo that day. It was a solo harp performance, and it was exquisite.
Hearing Dorothy Ashby play Moon River with solos, just another church on Sunday for Marion Hayden.
Yeah, that was, yeah, so that was the level of immersion that music was at that time in Detroit. Thank you.
A music education in Detroit is an opportunity like few others, but yes. You also had the opportunity to study with the late Marcus Belgrave.
Yes.
A person who did so much amazing session work across genres with top national acts, but also fell in love with the city and adopted Detroit. Will you tell me about him?
Yes. I met Marcus when I'll just do a short digression, which is the programs that we present for youth to learn jazz and interact with professionals and players in the community are highly important. It's really important that we put our resources in that. And so there are several of us that met the jazz community through a community youth program called Metro Arts at the time, and that's how I met Marcus. And he and several other great musicians from the community were teaching there. And they were most willing to just share everything they knew about jazz with us and about music in general, because to play jazz is really to be not only a reading musician, but someone who also becomes very adept at music theory, too. So Marcus was energetic. He was a taskmaster. He was always willing to give me and those other young folks around him music that was a little bit harder than we could do. One of the wonderful things I appreciated him was that he asked us to work from not only as a standpoint of reading musicians, but also he insisted on that we train our ears so that we can understand what we were hearing and be able to react to what we were hearing in the music.
How would he do that?
Well, for instance, I remember one of the songs that I play in my ensemble book now is a song that was written by the great bass player, living bass player, Cecil McBee, and it was called Wilpon's Walk. So this was an early piece that Marcus taught us. And so Marcus never, this song was written out, but the bass line was never written out. And it was a very specific bass line. And he gave me that bass line. He sang that bass line to me. So I had to reproduce that bass line by ear from his singing. Right. So there were, you know, there were chord changes, as you know, we said there was some music that outlined other parts, but that specific part of the bass line, I had to learn from his singing of it, and so it was very interesting because finally, several years later, I'm actually had a chance to hear the recording because somehow the recording had never surfaced when we were working on it. And it was in fact completely exactly how he had sung it to me, and I've always remembered that bass line the way he sang it to me. I learned it that way, and that was my lesson. So you know, you get a theoretical lesson from reading the music, and then you also get an ear lesson from having to understand what things sound like and being able to sing things back or play things back.
Listening to your recordings and also in your live performances, you have an ability to get large ensembles to really shine. Could you, what, I don't know if that speaks more to the, you know, your choice of collaborators and, you know, the intention that goes into that, or the nature of the music itself. What would you say it takes to get a band to explode in that way?
I think it really first starts with personnel. A lot of times I don't always use the same personnel on any particular project because I may be looking for different things maybe trying to make a different statement about the music. So it starts with personnel. You know, you can write whatever you like, but the person is the interpreter. The interpretation of your music comes through an individual. So I try to really think deeply about what am I saying with this and who do I think will best say this particular thing, and there's some people that are pretty good at saying anything, and then there's some people that are just sublime at saying one particular thing or have a thing that they do that is just perfect for something. And so I try to think about it that way. And then when I compose, I try to think really deeply about, as I said, what is the story? There's always a story that I'm trying to convey in anything that I'm doing, whether I've written it myself, it's self-composed, or if I'm using someone else's material that I really enjoy. It's really what's the story? What's the narrative? What's the vision I'm trying to put in the mind of the audience? And so usually if I start that way, and then if I'm really careful about choosing folks that I know will make the vision happen, then it actually is, it's not that hard to get folks to come your way, you know.
Do you think that you would be able to get the effects that you do without the bench of collaborators who play around Detroit?
It would be harder. And Detroit has a deep bench. I always tell people that Detroit has a deep bench, and the reason why Detroit has a deep bench is because we have had generations that stayed here. And I know in a lot of communities, people would get to a certain age and they just said, you know, I'm out of here, I'm moving to New York.
Going to New York,
or
yeah.
Or going to L.A. or whatever, you know, right. They're going to go to the coast. But the Detroit community has been such that we've had a deep bench of people that have stayed here, and as a result of that, they've been able to continue to encourage more generations to come up. And that is the reason why we continue to have great musicians that are resident here, and we can really put on projects that of many different sizes, of many different types, and really be able to represent the music just exquisitely, so extremely well.
I do still, as many ensembles as you're involved in, I do really enjoy your solo playing as well. When you play solo, are you alone with your thoughts?
I usually am, but I spend a lot of time in my personal practice practicing those things. I always tell my students that it's really hard to do in front of people what you have not done at all. So when I work on things in my personal practice, my personal studio, I try to be very explorative in my work, and I really try to dig down and explore all the different things that I've heard, try to be very very authentic, very real. Really pull from things, and I found that over the years, the pulling has been easier because there's just so much more to pull from, so many more life experiences. The well has gotten quite deep now.
You know, in the last few decades, the jazz industry has developed a lot of glam in places like Los Angeles and London. And I feel like during that time, Detroit's developing a little different kind of identity. Like you say, a place where maybe people stayed to do what they were doing, whereas they might have sort of fallen in with one sound or another if they had gone to the coast or somewhere else. How else would you describe what Detroit has to offer today, maybe in terms of sound?
I've always felt that Detroit, particularly since it's still 85% African American, represents the breadth of black music that you can absorb if you so choose to. And you can absorb not only jazz music, gospel, traditional gospel, contemporary gospel, rhythm and blues, hip-hop, and all of the different genres that are spurs of that, house music, all those things. So I find that if you spend some time here and really dig into the community, and our community is very welcoming for folks that would like to be a part and really dig in. That what you can come out with is your own music with some really interesting accents and influences. You can have your own music, and then and bring in some of those influences to bear that can really enrich what it is that you do. And I think that, to be honest, a lot of the coastal cities actually look to Detroit for a lot more than we think they do. That a lot of times things actually start here and move out, as opposed to thinking that they start in the coast and move in.
Having recently returned, I can absolutely echo that. That is true. Marion Hayden. She can be seen in performance with the Momentum Project in concert with Ellen Rowe, also of the U of M School of Music, March 14th in Ann Arbor. And her ensemble Straight Ahead is playing at Blue Llama March 27th. And here's something to look forward to a little bit later in the year. On June 6th, we can expect a performance of Ocean, The Life and Times of Phyllis Wheatley. That's Marion Hayden's composition, inspired by the poet and former slave who was the first black woman published in America. Marion Hayden, it is such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for stopping in.
Thank you for having me, April.